Hi and welcome to this edition of What's Next, this time recorded in Beijing, China, and I'm Thomas Wenström. Today we will talk to one of the great experts on internet in China, a guy with hands-on experience. His name is Kaiser Ku. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And you are right now Group Director of Digital Strategy for Ogilvy China.
Yes.
And you have done a lot of other fun stuff as well. You had a startup in 99 called China Now, for example.
Yeah, actually, technically, it wasn't my startup. I was working for it.
You were the first employee.
I was the first employee.
And you've been a bureau chief for Red Herring also in China?
That's right.
And a freelance writer and a musician?
Yes, all those things.
Great.
I freelanced for quite a number of technology-related magazines like Telecom Asia, Wireless Asia, Asia Computer Weekly. I did quite a bit of writing for Time, mostly on internet and telecom-related things.
Which means you're perfect for answering questions about China and internet. Could you just paint a broad picture of the state of internet in China now? Like, who's making money, who's using it?
Sure. Who's using it? Penetration still, you know, is only roughly 10% of the population, so there's quite a bit of room for growth. But 10% of the population is still huge. I mean, what's Sweden's population?
Well, that's 8 million, so that's not even.
Right. So, I mean, I think the district that we're sitting here in East District of Beijing probably has, well, it's probably 8 million people that I can see just out my window here.
So like 10%, that's like 130 million or whatever, something?
Yeah, it's probably well over 140 million right now and still growing fast. That's, of course, focused mostly on larger urban areas right now. And internet penetration in the countryside is, of course, still quite low. I'm on the one hand extremely optimistic about how the internet is developing in China, but on the other hand, you know, it's still beset with a lot of very serious problems.
Like,
well, I think let's leave aside for now the conspicuous ones like the censorship issue, but just in terms of the commercial internet, the way that it's developed, it's quite unhealthy. I think at the very root of the problem is a lack of trust. Advertisers don't know whether they can trust internet companies in their reporting on numbers, on their metrics. There are no independent, trustworthy third-party auditing companies or measurement companies. I mean, nobody really would ever submit to auditing.
So the figures of visitors in China is just made up, sort of, or you don't know if they're made up?
That's right. It's very difficult to figure out. I mean, when, say, you're a venture capitalist and you're evaluating an internet company and they make some you know, very, very big claims about their traffic numbers, the only real way to know, according to some people that I've talked to, is to look at their hardware expenditures, to look at how much they're spending on bandwidth and how many servers they're adding, because that's the only thing that they're not going to lie about. They're not going to buy servers or add bandwidth that they don't actually need to support traffic.
That's quite clever.
But on the other hand, there are, I think, incredible numbers of people on some of these sites, and it's obvious when you get on there just by the buzz on some of these internet sites. A lot of them aren't yet monetizing their pages. They have enormous page view numbers, but right now they're burning through venture money, and they haven't really switched on the advertising switch yet. We're of course waiting for that to happen.
So what kind of sites are popular?
What kind of sites are popular? I mean, the dominant sites still are the brand name portals, Sina, Tencent,
Baidu,
NetEase, and of course China's dominant search engine, Baidu, of course, which by most estimates has north of 60% market share here in China. That's a matter of some debate. But
they are bigger than Google, for example, as far as I understand.
They're three times the size of Google here. 20% is the number that we often hear for Google. Although I think it's interesting, a Canadian company I just blogged about called Enquiro, they're a search marketing company, just put out a heat map study, an eye tracking study, based on 50 Chinese students, presumably in British Columbia and Canada, who apparently, just judging by the way that they interacted with Baidu and with Google, found Google's Chinese results to be much more relevant. They were able to find what they were looking for in only half the time, 30 seconds versus 55 seconds, and it only took them about half the real estate down the page before they found what they were looking for. The reasons for that are numerous. Baidu, even though they have recently changed their algorithm, they still mix in paid search results with organic search results. It's hard to tell which are which, and presumably the organic ones are the ones that are more relevant. Baidu is not as scrupulous as Google is about separating the two, about marking very clearly what is a paid search result. But Chinese users don't seem to object to that, at least not yet.
I heard from many people here that Chinese people are much more receptive to advertisement than otherwhere. I don't know if that's true.
That's actually true. I mean, we're talking about a market that still is hungry for information and education, and advertising they perceive as one way of actually gleaning information. They're not. For example, I think in studies that have been done on cookie deletion, you know, cookies are, of course, the most important element in online marketing. Cookie deletion rates in the U.S. are about 10%. 10% of internet users will, on some regular basis, delete tracking cookies. In China, it's less than 1%.
And is that because of lack of awareness that you can do it, or because they actually want to have...
I think that, first of all, there's less worry about privacy. Most people, I think, if they believe that they can be delivered more relevant advertising, they're willing to accept giving up a little bit of what we would, you know, in the West call privacy. And there are much worse things to worry about in China. China, in the internet environment, is full of browser hijackers and phishing sites and keystroke trackers and all sorts of evil malware out there. The browser hijackers, forced pop-ups and things like that, these are probably the worst offenders, and a lot of major internet sites do this still regularly. The Internet Society of China recently said they are about to release a blacklist of 14, I think it is, major internet companies that are still habitually using what we call hooliganware in China, liumangruanjian, malware of one form or another, mostly things that do things mostly like install themselves without permission and make it extremely difficult for the average user to uninstall. There's just been this escalation between these competing.
But still, internet is obviously catching on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt that it's taking off. I mean, it's growing annually at 20% or more. And, it's...
What about blogs, for example?
Blogs,
I heard
too.
Figures like there are 50 million blogs in China, whatever.
That's an exaggeration. I think the number of people who blog fairly regularly is probably closer to 18 or 19 million. But that's still a very, very...
18 million.
18 million, 19 million, right. Who you know, post to their blogs...
That's quite a few.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, you're talking about, you know, two and a half Swedens here, just in bloggers. And
how does that work? I mean, what do people blog about?
It's not really the same as you'd see in the United States. There aren't a lot of sort of topic-specific blogs. Most of them are still very, you know, personal life-oriented. Most of them are more sort of the sorts of things you'd see on LiveJournal than you'd see, say, on a more professional Six Apart type pad or movable type or WordPress type of blog. There are some more serious blog hosting, blog service providers. You see some people who are doing blogs that are focused on gadgets or focused on Web 2.0 or on technology more generally. But I think you see a lot more that are sort of my personal life.
Yeah.
I had to
for friends and family.
Exactly. Yeah. I had to take my cat to the veterinary.
Let's jump to another subject. Streaming TV. I read on your blog that a lot of streaming TV companies are actually hosted and developing products here in China.
That's right. That's right. I think it's, again, it's because there's a very lax atmosphere here, where peer-to-peer has developed extremely in a very, very robust way. We don't have anything here on the scale of Juiced yet, but Juiced is, of course, legal, and it uses all licensed content. But what we're talking about here in these so-called streaming TV blogs, streaming TV sites, often they're using unlicensed content. A lot of it is American television shows. It's pretty astonishing what they're able to do, though. Again, nothing.
So basically, I've seen one of them, PP Stream or whatever it's called.
I love that name, PP Stream. That's correct.
But as far as I understood it, you could basically, if you had your own TV card, you could sort of start broadcasting any TV channel you happen to receive it to your computer.
That's correct.
To the audience.
That's right.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
And I can understand it's difficult to develop a thing like that in the States.
Yeah, of course. I think.
But they're still receiving quite a lot of venture capital.
Yeah, that's touchy. There are some VC funds that have put money into sites like PP Live. And I think that's all with the understanding that they're going to persuade them to go legal, to go totally legit. I don't know what's going to happen in terms of the quality of the content once we see that. But I think, peer-to-peer is extremely well developed here, and we're going to see a lot of innovation coming out of that space here in China.
Yeah, and what about that? I mean, so far, there are not that many Chinese internet companies known outside China. Will that change, or am I maybe wrong? Maybe they are, and I'm not aware of it.
I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. It's a very different language environment. There's really only one example I can think of a Chinese internet company that has a substantial footprint outside of China. It happens to be a company I'm very close to and I'm a big fan of. I've made no issues of that, and that's a browser company called Maxton, which is a terrific browser, which began life as not much more than an IE browser wrapper, but has gone on. Now it supports not just the IE rendering engine, but also the Gecko rendering engine, and it has a lot of very cool plugins and a lot of standard features that come on it. It's the first tabbed browser that I fell in love with, and I still use it pretty religiously. They have actually about an 8% market share in China, but they've been downloaded well over 80 million times. I don't know how many PCs that actually represents. And they are all over the place. I mean, they're they're Maxton fans in the Valley, in Israel, in Europe, and all over the world.
The browser war never goes away, and now Apple is in it again.
That's right. Now they've got Safari for the
What about Web 2.0 things in China, tagging, social networks, etc.? Is it catching on? Or
yeah, no, it's very much catching on. I think there's a burgeoning Web 2.0 industry. It's hampered by a couple of things. Again, the trust issue. One of my colleagues just posted a very good post on the Ogilvy China Digital Watch blog, talking about the big problem with Chinese Web 2.0, and that's the lack of open APIs. And he cites as an example of how an open API environment can let you can create terrific synergies for both sides, for example, a Twitter and a Facebook. We're not seeing that happen in China.
How come? Do you know?
I don't really know. I've never actually sat down with one of the executives of these companies to say, why don't you open up your APIs? I think there's more willingness, of course, by the small application developers. But, of course, if they don't have someone to play with in terms of, a big destination site, be it a portal or a big service provided by a search engine, search engine's mapping service, for example, you don't have the mashup phenomenon that you have, say, based on Google Maps or on Google Earth.
Let's say I would like to enter China. I have my internet company. The Chinese markets look promising. What do I do? I mean, will I fail?
I don't think you're bound to fail. I think that's been a myth that's been propagated, I think, and it's been sort of buoyed by, on the Chinese side, by this you know, nationalism. Now, truth is, there are not a lot of shining examples of successes by American internet companies in China, or any foreign internet companies in China to speak of. But I don't think that's a hard and fast rule. I think that if you come in, if you have a product that's appealing, if it's properly localized, and if you safeguard your intellectual property in some way, you can succeed here. You just need to give quite a bit of autonomy, I think, to the local Chinese team. You need to come in with your eyes very, very much open about how you're going to get into this market, because it's not an easy market to penetrate. You have to play by Chinese rules when you come here. I mean, not only official rules, that is, operating in accordance with, you know, what the Ministry of Information Industries tells you, but also by the rules of the jungle, the law of the jungle here in China, where there is, you know, to be honest, there's quite a bit of dirty fighting and a lot of trickery. I'm not suggesting that any internet company that comes in here has to go the malware route and have their applications stubbornly install themselves in a way that are completely unremovable. But I think it's possible. Now, yeah, it has been very difficult. We're seeing, you know, another couple of very big names from the United States make an entry into China. For example, MySpace. Rupert Murdoch has given quite a bit of independence to the MySpace team, which is headed by Luo Chuan, who's a former head of MSN.
Is this still called MySpace in China?
There's actually, now that I've just mentioned MSN, they are a very good example of a success story in China. The Messenger, the MSN Messenger, while it doesn't have quite the market share that the indigenous QQ has,
QQ is a chat thing.
It's an IM client, but its parent company, Tencent, I mean, the company that makes it, is also a very big web destination site. It has news, it has all sorts of mobile services, it has video, it has streaming TV. It's QQ is probably the least understood and mightiest Chinese internet company. Tencent, rather, the company that made QQ. Mm-hmm. It began life as a simple IM, really a very much a ripoff of ICQ, to the point where it was called OICQ, which stood for Open ICQ, and the company ICQ actually filed suit and forced them to change their name, and they started calling themselves QQ. It's so popular here that there's actually a make or a model of an automobile made by a company called Chery. It's called the QQ.
One night to Tangos, who writes the China Web 2.0 review blog, I will put a link to that one. He said that a lot of people, although we say that there are 100 million plus users of internet in China, a lot of them actually never surf. Some of them just use QQ and chat with friends and relatives.
That's absolutely true.
And that's interesting. That, I mean, surfing is not the main thing for some people.
Now, there are a lot of interesting things to know about the Chinese internet. One of them is, yes, that people don't surf. That's a very good observation. There's another one that I only really discovered this. I mean, it only really dawned on me quite late when I bought a very nice computer for my father-in-law, who is 60 years old. He was about 60 years old at the time. And I realized that he has no way of inputting on a standard keyboard. There's no, I mean, he came up in a time in his education where he wasn't taught the romanization system that most people, pinyin, which most people use to input Chinese on a computer. And so apparently there are a lot of people like him. In fact, there are a lot of people like him, so much so that there are two companies, one now that's owned by Baidu and one that is invested in heavily by Google, that have that are essentially pages that you set as your homepage and simply provide a huge list of links to sites that are common destination sites, because knowing that you can't input into the input a URL because you don't know how to type.
So actually there's a demand for these huge portals things
that's right.
Sort of were scrapped.
Exactly. I mean, it's very much like the very primitive Yahoo.
Yeah.
where it was just lists of links.
All right, that's clever. He just needs to point and click.
Your mouse. Exactly. All you need is your mouse.
I know you're busy and you have a meeting. Can I just ask you very shortly about this startup China Now you had back in 99 in China?
Sure.
It would be interesting to hear your story about that one.
It's interesting. I had actually just left the band that I had been playing in. It was China's first and probably still most successful heavy metal band. It was called Tang Dynasty. And
Did you make a living out of the band? Yeah, I made a living out of the band.
A nasty breakup, and I went home, and I was just trying to figure out what the hell I was going to do next. And I realized that the few skills that I actually possessed, that I knew how to write, I knew quite a bit about the city of Beijing, I had good connections in the entertainment world, and I knew how to use a computer. I wasn't afraid of computing anyway. So I thought, hey, maybe, you know, there's this internet boom going on. It was the year 99, after all. There's got to be some Chinese internet company that's got an English site that maybe, you know, needs a good editor. And I sort of comforted myself and drifted off to sleep. And the next morning, I got a phone call, just as though my prayers had been answered, from somebody who's looking for an English editor-in-chief of just such an internet site. I went and met them very, very soon afterward, and that company was called ChinaNow.com, and it was a lot of fun. Still, to this day, it was one of the most fun jobs I've ever worked. Just a terrific team of people, and I learned a lot about how the Chinese internet worked. Even though I was editing the English site, of course, worked very closely with the people on the Chinese side of the site as well, which had aspirations to be a big portal.
But what was the internet in China back then in 99? I mean, I guess there were not 100 million users.
I was our office in Beijing. For the first 3 weeks, we had a dial-up internet connection.
That's all you need.
And then we had ISDN after that. We didn't have our first ADSL line, which was still just pathetically slow. You know, 512 ADSL. Until maybe about 4 or 5 months into operation, it was terrible. I mean, of course,
but was there an audience?
Didn't really know what we were doing. Yeah, there was an audience. I mean, there back then, you know, there were only maybe 20 million people on the Chinese internet.
Still,
it's again 3 Swedens, but it was tough. It was tough.
But then things didn't go that well because China Now does not exist.
They came very, very close to going well. They came very close to going well. We actually had a buyout offer on the table by a U.S.-based portal that had been recently acquired by a European ISP. Problem was that the founders of this U.S.-based portal feuded in the weeks before our transaction went through with their new owners on the Iberian Peninsula. And they froze all acquisition deals. I mean, just it broke our hearts. It demoralized the founding team, who all decided they had better hurry up and find real jobs because they were out quite a bit of money. So we folded up operations, and I tried to keep our editorial team together on a couple of other things. A lot of us went to magazines. We had started to repurpose our online content in print, and that was actually the way that we were doing quite well. The English side of ChinaNow.com actually was at or near break even by the time that we folded, but we decided that we couldn't really hobble along for too much longer. There wasn't the audience and the viewership to sustain an English website, so we just called it quits.
Thank you very much, Kaiser Ku, for taking your time, and I know you have at least one blog.
I've got one blog. It's Kaiser Kuo, all one word, KAISERKUO .typepad.com. And right now you can go to that and find a link to the other blog that I'm spending much more of my time on right now, which is the Ogilvy China Digital Watch. The URL is far too long for me to tell you. It's just
we'll put a link in the show notes. And there you're writing about the internet, or the team is writing about the internet in China now. So if you want to know more, that's a good place.
There's only a few of us actually doing contributions to it right now, but I think you'll find it to be very useful if you're interested in the Chinese internet and in the mobile space. We think of it as a blog that will write about anything that grows at the intersection between marketing and technology.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.